All right, so the idea for this talk today came actually from Judy. And we'll talk after work and dinner time. And frequently she'll tell me what's going on during the day. And she'll tell me about something that happened during the day. I had these plans to do. It didn't go right. Or one of her friends and family members had something go wrong. And she says this a lot. She'll say, boy, I hope the Lord has a sense of humor. Well, I'm here today to convince you the Lord does have a sense of humor. All right? And the first two are more deductive reasoning than anything. The first one, if you want to follow along, it's okay. If not, I'll just read them to you. But first comes from Genesis chapter 1, in verse 26, and says, and God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. In verse 27, it says, so God created man in his own image, in the image of God created him. So we've been created. We talked about this before during Genesis series. God created man in his image. And I like what I read about a commentator had to say. God is spirit, so we're not talking about the body. Think about the body as a shell, a repository for all the good things from God's image that he gives us. He's given us these abilities and capabilities and everything. See, we can see, hear, smell, touch. We have language skills. We have knowledge, thought. We're ability to think and plan. We have all the emotions that God's given us. Happiness, sadness, anger, shame, love, hate, sympathy. And we have consciousness, free will, ability, and moral judgments. We can do all these things thanks to what God's given us. So if we have all those things and we have sense of humor, it makes sense to me that God gave us that sense of humor. So it's more or less deductive reasoning. Let's take a look now in Proverbs 17. Let's see. The next one here, Proverbs 17, verse 22. A merry heart doeth good like medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. So this is the origin of the phrase we all know, laughter is the best medicine. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I looked at a Christian website, so if you don't like these, you have to blame them. But it's scientifically proven that laughter has health benefits. Laughter causes increased blood flow. It activates the immune system. It releases dopamine and endorphins. Those are the same hormones we feel when we exercise hard, and then we get that feeling that it feels so great. Well, all those things lead to lower blood pressure, decreased inflammation in our body. It reduces pain if you're in pain. And cancer patients have been shown to do better if they're happy and take a good approach to their treatments and things. So it's good for your physical body. It's also good for your emotional health. When you laugh about things, it reduces your stress hormones, thereby combating sadness, anxiety, fear, and depression. Those things are all really tools that Satan uses to bring us down and separate us from God, if you think about it, right? So why wouldn't we want to get away from that? It also increases overall well-being. If we look at Proverbs 15, verse 13, a merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, all right? And then the same chapter, verse 15, all the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. That's a great picture. You're in a good mood. Your life is like a feast. So think about it. I think about it this way, that laughter and humor are God's natural medicine. It's good for you. So, all right. And now we're going to finish up with some stories from the Bible that I think bring home this point. I know you're not going to believe this, but I think the Bible has laugh out loud moments. Too many people think, no, this is boring. I don't want to read this. There's a lot of funny things that happen in the Bible. And we're going to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 5. Now, the setting of this is the years where the Philistines and the Israelites are fighting back and forth. It's just a constant thing. This side wins, that side wins. And at this time, the Philistines had the upper hand and were winning battles. And the Israelites foolishly went and got the Ark of the Covenant, brought it to the battle, ended up losing the battle. And the Philistines took the Ark of the Covenant back to their city. And we'll pick up the chapter or the story here in chapter 5 of 1 Samuel. And the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer unto Ashdod. That's her city. Believe it or not, Ashdod's still there today. When you talk about those stories about from the Gaza Strip right now, you'll hear about Ashdod. When the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it into the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon. So Dagon is their false god. And he's like a half-man, half-fish type thing. And imagine they're talking about a little statue. I'm not sure how big this was. It could have been like this, or who knows, or like a little garden gnome, who knows. Doesn't really say. So when they of Ashdod arose early on the morrow, behold, Dagon was fallen upon his face to the earth before the ark of the Lord. Folks, that's hilarious. God could have brought down thunder, lightning, fire from heaven, destroyed the temple of Dagon, destroyed their city, all sorts of things. But he didn't. He took Dagon off the shelf, put it down on the floor, face down, so he's facing the ark, worshiping God, Jehovah God. And that's hysterical. And then the next day, when they rose up early on the morrow morning, behold, Dagon was fallen upon his face to the ground before the ark of the Lord. And the head of Dagon and both palms of the hands were cut off from the threshold. Only the stump was left. So they do it again. Unfortunately, the Philistines weren't too right. I mean, it shows that Jehovah God was much more powerful than their God, which is a false God anyway. But they weren't going to accept that, sadly. So we'll move on to our second episode, which occurs right after this. The Lord's going to bring more misery upon the Philistines. In verse 6, but the hand of the Lord was heavy upon them of Ashdod, and he destroyed them and smote them with emerods, even Ashdod and the coast thereof. And emerods, it's been accepted in the past, is to be hemorrhoids. Okay, some of the newer people think it was bubonic plague, which would lead to dysentery and diarrhea and all these other problems. So they were sore on their backside. I mean, struck with hemorrhoids. I mean, that's hilarious. Unless you got them. So if you think about it, I mean, some Bible scholars have called this a spiritual spanking from Jehovah. All right. Now, the next episode I'd like to talk about comes from Numbers 11. Numbers 11. Now, just to set the stage for what's happening in this chapter, the first 10 chapters in Numbers describe the Lord preparing the Israelites for the journey through the wilderness to the promised land. He blesses them. He teaches them everything they need to know. He supplies all their needs. They've been given manna for like a year now, so everything's great. But for some reason, some in the crowd started murmuring. And when they were murmuring about food, and what they wanted was meat. You can imagine this crowd going, "We want meat." It reminds me of the 70s when the Wendy's used to have, "Where's the beef? Where's the beef?" They're very ungrateful. So what do we have? We've got now an angry mob of Israelites who are crying out for meat because they're bored with their food. We've got Moses in the middle, who's their spokesperson. He doesn't know what to do. He's stressed out and incredibly frustrated. And then you've got the Lord on this side, who understandably brings the wrath of the Lord because these people have been so ungrateful for this. So let's see what happens in response from the Lord. Numbers 11:19 says, "Ye shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month, until it come out of your nostrils, and it be loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, Why came we forth out of Egypt?" So that's what the Lord thinks about this, and let's see what he does about it. Continue in the same chapter in verse 31. Listen what happens. "And there went forth a wind from the Lord, brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp as it were a day's journey on this side, as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth." So you have to imagine this. Israelites have this camp in the center where they're all living. And outside of the camp, how far can you walk in a day? At least several miles, right? So for that entire distance, it's just full of quails, 2 cubits, that's 36 inches or about a yard high. So if you left the camp, you'd be walking through quails up to your waistline. You couldn't get through with waders or boots. I mean, that's funny. I think the Lord was being sarcastic here. It's pretty good.
Careful what you wish for.
Exactly. So, and we'll continue in Numbers with another story. This one's more famous. I'm sure you all know this one. Numbers chapter 22. The story of Balaam. Now, just to set the story here with Balaam, Israel, this is the same time period. Israel is still on this wilderness journey, approaching the promised land. They've defeated the Ammonites, and now they're encountering the Moabites. The Moabites are living in fear of the Israelites. So they find this mighty prophet named Balaam, who does know the Lord, actually. And the king wants him to curse the Israelites so they can bring him down and win the battle against the Israelites. God warned Balaam. He said, do not do this. Do not go. Do not do this. Don't. So in chapter 22, Balaam, since he loves the money, decides to go and visit with King Balak and the Moabites. So Balaam gets up on his donkey, as you recall from the story, gets on his donkey and starts riding along the trail. And verse 22, and God's anger was kindled because he went. And the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now he's riding upon his donkey, and his two servants were with him. So we see here the Lord, the angel of the Lord. This is the pre-incarnate Christ, Jesus Christ. And he's standing in the way, and he's got a sword drawn. And what happens is the donkey, as you call, can see the angel of the Lord blocking the way. But Balaam can't. So every time he comes to try to approach him, the donkey gets off the pathway, or he pushes against the wall and hurts Balaam's foot, or he just drops down. And every time that happens, Balaam strikes the donkey, hits him. So what happens in verse 28? And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said, the donkey said unto Balaam, what have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times? The donkey's talking. What is this, Mr. Ed? What's going on here? And Balaam said unto the donkey, because thou hast mocked me, I would that there were a sword in mine hand, for now I would kill you. And the donkey said unto Balaam, am I not thy donkey, upon which thou hast ridden ever since I was thine until this day? Was I ever wont to do so unto thee? He said, nay. So this is incredible. He's sitting here, a man's having a conversation with a donkey. He's not even thinking that this is unusual. Like, come on, really? And of course, after this, the Lord opens his eyes. He can see the angel of the Lord standing right there, and the Lord chastises him for doing this. And I want you to note, too, this is the pre-incarnate Christ, the Jesus was speaking right to him and allowing this to happen. I think it's hilarious. All right. Another one, just a couple more to go, almost done here. In Genesis, in an episode I call the Last Laugh. Who has the last laugh? Genesis chapter 17. This is the point where the Lord is going to promise Abraham and Sarah about having a child. And in Genesis 17, verse 16, and I will, the Lord speaking, I will bless her and give thee a son of her, also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, king of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed, and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? So the Lord has renewed this promise about them having a child. At this point, Abraham's 100 years old. So he thinks this is hilarious, and he laughs at the Lord or the idea. The story continues in chapter 18, a famous episode where Abraham's living on the plain in the tent, and these three strangers appear out of nowhere, basically. Two are angels, and one is the pre-incarnate Christ, Jesus himself. And they meet with Abraham, and they're talking with him outside the tent. Sarah's inside the tent, and she's hiding behind the tent, listening. She's eavesdropping. And we pick up in verse 9, and they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of thy life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent which was behind him. Now they were stricken in age, and Sarah, of course, didn't believe this. But in verse 12, therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after am I waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being also old? And listen to this. And the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall surely bear a child, which I am old? I love this verse, verse 14. Is there anything too hard for the Lord? So this is so cool. The Lord probably couldn't, I mean, no one heard Sarah laughing except the Lord knew it. He could tell she was laughing about it. So in verse 21, I'm sorry, in chapter 21, they have the birth of Isaac. And basically Sarah conceives, bears Abraham a son in his old age. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. So why did they call him Isaac? Well, the reason they did was found back in chapter 17, where God made the original promise. In verse 19, it says, and God said, Sarah, thy wife, shall bear a son indeed. Thou shalt call his name Isaac. What does Isaac mean? Isaac means he laughs or laughter. So I submit to you that God had the last laugh in this case. All right, and I say my favorite for last. This one comes from Judges, and it's in chapter 6. And it has to do with the call of Gideon. And just to summarize real quickly, this is the time period of the Judges. There's no king in Israel. Israel's good for a while, worships the Lord. They fall into apostasy. They get in trouble, and other nations oppress them, and they call for the deliverer, and the cycle repeats itself, basically. At this point in this story, they're in big trouble. The Midianites are totally oppressing them. They come in and take all their food, everything they work so hard for. They just take it away. And the Israelites are in danger of starving. They're just in a very bad situation. And in verse 11 of chapter 6 in Judges, it says, "And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak," which was in Ophrah. By the way, that's where Oprah got her name. Her mom misspelled it. True story. "That pertained unto Joash the Abizite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord," catch that again, pre-incarnate Christ, "appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Well, how many of you think that's funny? All right, at least one. All right, exactly. Hang on. All right, so this is very subtle humor, I think, and I love subtle humor. So why is this funny? Well, this is it. You have to know a little bit about threshing wheat. Gideon's here. He's threshing wheat. How do you thresh wheat? How does somebody from Chicago know how to thresh wheat? I had to look it up. So you harvest your wheat, and what they did in ancient times, they'd take and throw it on the ground, and they'd let oxen tread over it and break it up a little bit. And then they would take a pitchfork, and that's called winnowing. They would take that material they just broke up, throw it up into the air, and the wind would blow off the chaff. The chaff is the stalk and the husks, the part that you don't want, so they get the grain. And so in ancient times, like then, threshing floors is where this happened, and they were built on hilltops, all right, because you needed the wind to help you. And where is this man Gideon doing this? He's down in a wine press, which is down at the bottom of the valley. Threshing this wheat was probably impossible. It was very difficult for him to do that. And the Lord comes up and taps him on the shoulder. "Thou mighty man of valor." It's hilarious. Gideon's acting a little bit cowardly, but don't take it the wrong way. I think it's the Lord's subtle humor. He knows that down deep, Gideon's a mighty man of valor, and he proves himself as such in this story. But I think he's having a little fun with him. All right. So we'll wrap it up there, but I love Hebrews 11:32 says, "And what shall I say? What shall I more say? For time would fail me to tell of." You think about it. There's many others. I'll just throw a few out. 1 Kings 18, Elijah at Mount Carmel. He's hilariously and sarcastically mocking the prophets of Baal in their contests. In Esther 6, Haman is forced to bestow honor upon his mortal enemy, Mordecai, the man. He thought he was getting the honor, but he had to give it to the man he hated. In Exodus, we'll see shortly, God brings a plague against every plague he brings is against a specific God of Egypt to show and humiliate and denigrate them. In Mark 5, one of my favorites as well, where Jesus meets the Gadarene demoniac, who's filled with a legion of demons. And he sends the demons out. He sends them into a herd of swine. The question is, why are the Gadarenes, the Jews, raising swine or pigs? Why are they raising pigs at all? And they send and they die in the lake. So I think that was pretty funny, too. So. All right, we'll leave with that. I just want you to know, folks, it's better to laugh than cry.